Coming up on Patriots This Week, a setback in Seattle.
Nothing we did today was good enough.
Primary questions about secondary misplays.
This man is open, should be caught. Touchdown. Saw that one coming.
Certainly not a game of perfect, but I think you have to overcome whatever mistakes you make.
Now, a familiar challenge. And tied for first, their swagger has returned.
You know, I think we're going to beat them.
That's right now on Patriots This Week.
Coulda, woulda, shoulda. That's what the Patriots were thinking after another loss, a disturbing 24-23 loss, actually sleepless coming back from Seattle. Welcome to Patriots This Week, everybody. I'm Scott Zolak, and joining me each and every week as usual, former linebacker Matt Chatham and the one and only Jay Wiggs. That's Jermaine Wiggins. First with you, Wiggy, what was your biggest disappointment on Sunday?
They made Russell Wilson look better, in my opinion, than he actually is.
I think they made Russell Wilson look exactly as he is, which is pretty good at the things they gave up. So my beef would be more that they didn't execute the plan. I mean, you see some of the coverage breakdowns that the Patriots have, and the places that they've purported to sort of design to take away are the things that they hit. And then, you know, the issues with Wilson being out of the pocket, I think, was the biggest problem. And I don't think any of us, we talked about this last week, like the one thing this guy is going to do, the only time at 5'10 where he can be dangerous when he gets outside the trees.
But do you think that they don't have an identity at this stage, the Patriots?
No.
Either side of the ball, offense or defense?
No, I think they have an identity. I think
because they can throw it, they can run it.
Yeah,
like, what do you want to do?
I think they have an identity. I think it's, if you look at this Patriots team, we know what to expect. The offense has to score points because defensively they're not able to make plays on a consistent basis. The games that they've lost are all games that they should have won. So they should be sitting there at 6-0, not 3-3 right now. The games that they lost, they gave those games away.
This team does a lot of things really well. I think they play from the linebacker, from the second level position, I think it's an improvement from last season, absolutely. I think game in, game out, they've been better. And they were decent last year in that regard. I think the front four has been good. I think when you get into a fighting game with a box game, with a seven, they do a really good job. I think the problem that they got lulled into a little bit in this game is because they almost might have been better in a situation where it was a little more of a diverse offense, because they wouldn't have been forced in a situation where it's just two-man routes.
Right.
Because we can beat you in the box, and that gives you a single on the outside, which throw it up and make...
It's frustrating for me that this is not a complicated offense that you had to scheme or game plan against. You just have to go out, react, as you said, Matt, and make plays. We talk about identity. I think a good identity that they've always had is clock management, good coaching situations. At the end of the half, from Denver and into Seattle, they struggled. You know, going for it, a touchdown with 6 seconds left instead of kicking. I love the call. I think you get a quick bang play right there. If it's not there, you bring Steve out, you kick it. Wiggy, did you like the way they managed the clock?
Why did they get an intentional grounding call? Don't just put it on Brady's head. Well, if you look at that play, Nate Solder gets blown back into Brady's lap. And so that puts Brady in a position where he is now under duress, knowing that they don't have any timeouts. He can't take a sack. And you'll see Deion Branch coming to the pitcher a little bit, and Brady just throws it out of the back of the end zone. I thought, like everybody else, Brady, Belichick, Pete Carroll, everybody was at that game. Nobody expected intentional grounding.
I'm with you, Zoe. I think it was absolutely the right thing to do with 6 seconds. This is something that the Patriots practice quite a bit. There's sort of a threshold for when it's right and when it's not right. Mm-hmm. With a three-step drop is what you're going to get from 3 yards out. The play's coming out and quick. That play could have easily been completed in 3 seconds. I mean, it may be four, so you have some spillover. You still have time to kick the play. It was just an execution error, and I think that's sort of the theme and thread that runs through all this.
There's been discussion this week that Tom Brady is on the downward turn. Some people, I think some crazy people enough, think that. ESPN has this QBR thing that's out. He's ranked in the bottom five as far as execution. Do you guys put any faith in any of these ratings that are out there?
Listen, if Tom Brady's on the downslide, then something's going on that I don't know about. If you look at the game, he went out there and threw 58 times. He threw for 380-plus yards.
Almost 400 yards.
Almost 400 yards. One of the interceptions you can put on him, the one he threw to Deion Branch. The other one, I think, as a former receiver, I think Wes Welker should have caught the ball.
If you're going to use statistical analysis to sort of talk about a personal attribute, about how good or bad someone is, I can literally sell you anything. Give me the stats. I'll filter them the right way.
Yep.
We can make anything look like anything. That's just the weakness of statistical analysis in football. It doesn't work. This isn't ping pong. It's not basketball grading 3-point percentages. It just doesn't work. That said, I agree that this wasn't Tom's best game, wasn't his worst game, and I know we try to search for one or the other. It was somewhere in the middle. Very productive throughout the course of the game, but with some bad decisions. I know you're right. There was some zip on that ball. It could have been caught, but I think the flip side of that coin from the receiver group is they got put in a lot of bad positions during the game. They got a lot of really big hits that were given up. You still wanted to make the play, but often you see the quarterback come and say, my bad on that one. I'll try not to lead you into that. Tom's still Tom.
Matt, you said you like stats. An NFL high 33 passing yards of 20 yards or more, including 5 or 40, have been hit against this secondary. Sell me on why the secondary is good.
The reality of stats is a completion of any amount of yards isn't just on a secondary. There's two other levels that are involved in the play. And there were seven big plays, seven of these kinds of plays in this game. You could only attribute it secondary only, and I think three of them, when I went back and watched the film. There's a lot of plays where loss of contain. You know, the first ball to Baldwin was thrown 52 yards in the air. I mean, or 50-yard completion, over 50 yards in the air. That's not a secondary thing.
It's unacceptable.
Yes. And there were several instances in the game. Patrick Chung's playing center field and is cheating to a tight end running a middle read and vacating the field in a lot of situations. I can't say that he's wrong. I don't know that. But it seems odd to me to sort of attract almost double attention to Miller in the middle of the field and go away from Arrington, who's running straight up the slot all by himself. Just doesn't seem to strengthen this defense to leave guys out like that.
Final series of the game. Three rookies back there, cover two. Is that fair spot to put them in? Pressure situation.
They've played enough of a football season for where guys, when they get in a particular situation, they're coached up to know what you need to do. Hey, we can't get beat deep. This is the situation. They need a touchdown. So, no, I don't put it on inexperience. I just put it on a lack of poor techniques and not taking advantage of the situation when they're in it.
That play is another sort of complex play where you show there's failures on multiple levels and it ends up being, you know, what is the safety doing? And he played poorly. I admit that. But for whatever reason, I don't know this, and I don't know what their call was, but Jermaine Cunningham's your left end. And on the snap of the ball, you watch all three other defensive linemen get off the snap and blow through the line, and Jermaine stands there for a full count and then continues to rush. You watch where the ball is inevitably thrown from by Russell Wilson, a yard into the pocket from where Jermaine eventually bull rushed his guy. He could have used that extra second, and that ball never gets off. The whole idea is it's a team defense. It plays to each level. It's really helpful to jam the receiver, and it looked like there was just sort of a shadowing of the receiver and allowing him to run right in the secondary. So it's a complimentary thing. There were errors sort of all over the place.
Teams, I think, across the league are putting up a ton of points. You look at the problems they have here defensively in the secondary. Do you guys think that the lack of hitting, you know, going back to camp, I'm trying to figure this thing out, can that affect anything? You know, we 2 days aren't the same anymore.
No.
They don't hit. They don't execute. There's a lot of walkthroughs. Can that affect play defensively?
So I don't think it's a cause of guys just not being as physical. I think it's a cause that guys are not as mentally sharp. Football IQs, in my opinion, are not as high as they used to be.
Well, another issue is, you know, this is sort of the players asking, and I'm not certain if I was still playing or if you guys were still playing that we wouldn't have wanted that as well. Yeah. A little less practice time, right? A little less violent during the end of the week. And it's maybe the urgency issue. I mean, because it's that part of the tail end of plays that you don't see. That when you're having a non-padded practice, that's kind of the time when everyone sort of eases up because you don't want to get a guy hurt. You don't want to expose your own guy.
The Patriots are 3-3, as are a lot of teams in the AFC. People like Baltimore going down like flies, a lot of injuries. And Peyton Manning, looks like that guy's back. We'll hit that and rant some raves next.
Patriots This Week is brought to you by Putnam, celebrating 75 years of service to financial advisors, their clients, and institutions worldwide. By Pepsi, the official soft drink of the New England Patriots. And by Waste Management. Remodeling or just have clutter to get rid of? Waste Management's new Bagster, Dumpster in a Bag, can take it on. Visit thebagster.com for more info.
This week's Putnam Player Spotlight is Wes Welker. The 5'9", 185-pound receiver has taken over the NFL lead in receptions. The 9-year veteran now has 48 on the season, averaging 13 yards per catch. And the 31-year-old proved just how tough he is against Seattle, bouncing back after a huge hit from Brandon Browning. This week's Player Spotlight is brought to you by Putnam Investments, pursuing performance excellence for 75 years.
Welcome back to Patriots This Week, and we look at the Baltimore Ravens. Yeah, we saw them a couple weeks ago and lost that close one at the end. Baltimore wins a ton of games on defense. Mm-hmm. They lose two key guys, two core guys to that team. Ray Lewis, captain, we know what Ray means to that defense, tears his tricep. Ladarius Webb, number 21, the other corner, one of the really good corners on that team, out for the year, ACL, How does this affect the Ravens with you?
Well, I think it affects them more from the loss of Webb than Ray Lewis, because Ray Lewis, I mean, his game has declined a little bit. He's more of that emotional leader on defense.
Sure, that means a lot.
It definitely does mean a lot, but I think Webb is the guy that they count on to do more on the football field, you know, to make the big plays. And, you know, if you lose a guy, it's very similar to the Jets losing Darrell Revis. When you lose one of your top players defensively, you're going to have issues. And I think when you looked at Baltimore, and I already thought they had issues because they lost, in my opinion, their best defensive player before the season even started, and that's Terrell Suggs.
We can't look at Baltimore 2012 through the 2006 lens. This is not that same team. This is not a fully defensive-led group. Put up 30 points on the Patriots. It was a competitive game. It was a close game. But I think this is a team that's a little more balanced. In the absence of a defensive player, it's not going to just go in the tank. I think it does change the face of the conference, to be honest, because Houston has looked a little shaky now. Pittsburgh, like you said, is not maybe the old Pittsburgh,
They lick their chops with the two injuries.
Exactly, you know? And a division across the way here that everyone's 3-3. So I think it's really a brand new horse race.
All right, so we got to talk about Peyton Manning, guys. They're down to the Chargers. Well, his team, the Denver Broncos, are down 24-0, 35 unanswered. I think he went 24 of 30 in that game to finish up. One interception, 3 touchdowns. What's that mean for the AFC?
Everybody has a legitimate chance to make the postseason. You know, I think right now Houston, yeah, they're not the same team that we think is, but, you know, they're the team that's ahead that might get that home field and that bye. But if you look at Denver, they're probably looking at it like, hey, we're in it just like everybody else is in it.
We're always waiting for Phillip Rivers to make that next step. Matt, 4 picks, 2 fumbles. Your take on Rivers?
Tail of two halves. I mean, they looked phenomenal in the first half. I don't know. Yeah. You know, it's just a consistency issue apparently out west as much as it is out east. It's sort of a conference that's in upheaval a little bit. And if you've got a quarterback like Peyton Manning leading your group, you know, the Patriots had a nice, comfortable 10-point win, but you still saw pretty good amount of efficiency for a road win. They still did some things. So I don't think you walked out of the game saying, oh, that team's in the rearview mirror. That's a team that could very realistically be back in the end.
All right, guys, let's reignite this border war, because when Patriots This Week comes back, we get into the JETS. That's right, Jets, 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 when we continue. The best thing the New York Jets had, or did have, was Darrell Revis and Antonio Cromartie when they're together. Revis is out for the year with an ACL, so now all eyes turn to Antonio Cromartie. Watch this guy. He's big, he's lanky, he's got nice length. Here he is, has the outside guy, jumps the inside seam. Patriots run a ton of this where Wes Welker will be that slot guy. Last thing Tom Brady wants to do, throw that ball out in the flat, get Wes's head taken off. Now, all of a sudden, watch the middle here. You got Crow coming over, he could run. Inside, everybody thinks he's an outside guy. No, gets the jam, goes up top with him, hangs back, boom, another pick. More importantly, every time this guy picks the ball off, he can run it back at any time. Again, here he is in the slot. Watch, comes in with the motion. Great communication right here between these two. Little switch off, no confusion. What's he do? Tips it, and then gets the pick with the left hand. And here we go, that's what I'm talking about, the return. Dangerous, dangerous return, man. So, if I'm Tom Brady, there's one guy I better know where he's at on the field at all times, and that's number 3-1.
I want them to know, and they know, that, you know, I think we're going to beat them.
Well, there he goes again. Rex Ryan just can't keep his mouth shut. You think, okay, the Jets have kind of, you know, had a lot of guys go down. Let's not put more pressure on a team where people are expecting them to win. Was it fair Rex Ryan thinks or even says his team will win this game prior to it happening?
I think the whole Rex Ryan thing is kind of ran thin.
You're getting tired of it.
Yeah, I think players feel the same way.
Friday 13th, like 17.
Yeah, you know, exactly. It's like
fourth one wasn't bad.
Yeah. It's almost like, Rex, we've seen this movie before. We've seen it. And I think as players feel the same way. It's like, let's just go out there and let's say, we're going to give it everything we got. And the players, you know, they'll buy into that and say, let's go out there, give it everything we got, and we're going to give it our best shot.
I'm sure in that locker room, they're rolling their eyes at this point, too. I mean, it's kind of like, oh, here we go again. I mean, and then, you know, Monday's gone, Tuesday's gone. Let's get in the game plan and play the game. I think that's really the MO of that team to begin with. I mean, the guys who were your mouse, your Santonio Holmes is down. I haven't heard a lot out of some of the other personalities. So it's actually gets it off his chest early in the week. I think up here you see people just rolling their eyes. I think in his own locker room they're rolling eyes. Now we play football. That's why we're here.
Matt, if you're the Jets, who's the number one receiver for the Patriots, and who would you put Cromartie on?
Well, it would seem an odd choice to put a tall, lanky guy in the slot, which is where you generally find Wes, especially with Wes moving around so much.
I think Wes can abuse him in the middle.
Yeah, it's also sort of a misnomer that Wes is just a slot guy, because in some of the other stuff, he'll be out wide. Or he'll start in the slot to run out stuff and deep cuts and stuff like that. So maybe they do that. I don't know. I think the way you combat that is you put a lot of other guys on the field. You go in 3 and 4 and 5 wide receiver sets. Great, take one of them away. I mean, that's a great thing. If you've got a 2-wide receiver set in a pro-style offense, that's not what this is. So I don't think it makes a ton of sense. I think it makes more sense to trap on the inside. They've got a lot of mismatches on the inside. Those aren't great coverage linebackers. Bark Scott's okay. He's really more of getting in the line and blitzing. David Harris is all right, but you don't want to see him on Gronk all day long.
Look at Mark Sanchez now as opposed to 3 years ago. Has he progressed, regressed, stayed the same?
When we talk about Mark Sanchez 09 and 010 when the Jets went to 2 AFC championship, let's not forget that was a team that was built on their defense. A very good defense at that time. But it's not the same defense no more. So now, basically what they're saying is, we don't have that same defense. And Sanchez, you can't carry this football team, because when we try to let you carry the football team, we see what you are. You can't read defenses. You throw balls either. They're too high, they're too low. And I think that's the one thing you're seeing with Sanchez.
Going to the San Francisco game, they've had a rash of injuries. They've got problems. They have their top three all guys. Santonio goes down early in that game. Stephen Hill's their number one draft pick, which is basically their new Plaxico body, big, tall, strong, fast guy. And then Dustin Keller's not playing then. He is now. None of the three top guys, but you watch that San Francisco game, you've got receivers running into each other, and then, you know, going, oh my bad, as they come off each play. You got just upheaval. You got, you know, it was an absolute just rampage into the backfield by some of the protection. If you come away from that saying, gosh, our quarterback's a problem. I mean,
yeah, but
there's like 10 problems.
But you also do have
game.
You have guys running down the field wide open that he can't hit.
Yeah, one out of 10. The problem usually isn't that. So it's really tough to judge a quarterback in that situation. I'm not saying he's doing great, but listen, there are 10 problems. That might be 1/10 of one of those 10 problems.
Can they still ground and pound? Can they still run it, even though they didn't get a compliment for Sean Green?
I mean, I think they can run it against the Colts. But let's be honest, they're running. You're talking about a Patriots front seven that plays very good against the run. Yeah, they might be able to run it against the Colts or somebody else, but have we seen anybody besides really Baltimore run it against this Patriots defense? Even Seattle knew. They tried to run it up in there with Marshawn Lynch. They weren't able to do it. So I don't think they can come into this game plan and say, hey, we want to run the football, because that's you're doing what the Patriots do best. You're saying, why run right into the teeth? I think you got to come out and you got to put it on Sanchez's shoulders and see if he can get it done.
The Indianapolis defense is sort of like a hybrid small guy, 3-4, and they would still pack the box and still had a hard time stopping him. So that wouldn't necessarily correlate to what you'll see from the Patriots. The thing you could get into, though, is if they go into a pro-style thing and it's just two receivers, you attract the Patriots' regular defense, which means we get in the situation that Zoe mentioned from Seattle, where you just, you know, pile up the box and then just turn and throw fades all day, and then that could be a problem. So I agree, it's going to be really tough to be efficient with the run game in that situation. I think it really plays to the Patriots' strength, but from the kinds of pass plays that you then see out of it, I think it could be a problem.
All right, guys, good stuff. Well, coming up next, we'll tell you who we like and why when Patriots This Week continues.
Patriots This Week is brought to you by Putnam Investments. Putnam celebrates 75 years of pursuing performance excellence. Putnam is a proud partner of the New England Patriots. By Bose, the official sound of the Patriots. And by Ace Ticket, the official fan travel partner of the Patriots. For information, call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com.
Time now for the Fantasy Lowdown. I'm Brian Lowe. DeMarco Murray goes down. Felix Jones is ready to rise up. The Cowboys' former first-rounder will get the carries against Carolina, and it's below-average run defense. Pick up Jones and start him. I don't like the Monday night matchup for Matthew Stafford, who threw 4 picks at Chicago last season and has been merely mediocre this year. Bench him against the Bears. A QB sleeper is Ryan Fitzpatrick. At home against Tennessee, should be easy pickings for Fitz. That's the Week 7 Fantasy Lowdown, brought to you by Verizon, the official wireless and telecommunications provider for the Patriots.
Welcome back to Patriots This Week. Time for predictions. Matt, we know who you picked last week. You picked Seattle. No, you didn't. You picked the Patriots. Who you like this week and why?
I'm going to go with the Patriots. I don't like the idea of them losing twice in a row. We know that's happened this year, but at least that second one was on the road. Coming back home against a tough rival, it allows you to push all the other things out of the way. 26-20. Patriots.
Wiggy.
I'm going with the P-A-T-S, Pats, Pats, Pats. 34-17, Sanchez can't get it done, but I did say that last week about Russell Wilson.
That was so cheesy, you know? I mean, everybody uses that now, P-A-T-S, okay. J-A-T-S. No, I'm kidding. Right. Hey, I like the Patriots, too. I like them 33-16 in the game. That's a real shocker right there. All three of us homers, so we take the Pats. For Matt Chatham, for Jermaine Wiggins, I'm Scott Zolak. See you next time on Patriots This Week.